There are lots of ways we can poison ourselves, unfortunately, and we'll be talking about how to prevent poisoning with Donna Lotzer, a senior clinical pharmacist and poison education coordinator. She's with the UW Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center in Madison. Been with us a number of times. I'm pleased to have her back. Before we get into that, I wanted to just take a minute to remind you that we will be broadcasting on July 24th from the Peninsula Players Theater in Door County. So I'm really looking forward to getting up there and having a chance to talk with you if you come and get there a little early, and we can chat and have a little visit and then take part in the broadcast. You can ask some questions during the broadcast, and then afterwards, if you like, I'm going to go to a fish boil, and you can come along too. So we're really looking forward to it. I know Jim has just verified that one of the topics for the day will be talking about cherries and the cherry industry with Dean Vollenberg, who's a Door County ag agent. So I'm sure he works out of Sturgeon Bay. So I'm sure that the questions will be flying hot and heavy regarding cherries. But we've got some other topic ideas where Jim's working on them, and I'll let you know as that develops. We're also hosting a shuttle bus to the event with pickups in Oshkosh, Appleton, and Green Bay to help you get to the broadcast if you don't want to drive yourself. And that'd be kind of fun, too. I wouldn't mind being on that bus. There's a lot of it'd be fun to be in there with a bunch of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. Again, the date, July 24th, and the normal time, obviously, we'll be broadcasting live from 11 to 12:30. Tickets, you can call 920-465-2502. That's 920-465-2502. And I tell you what, if you're going to be in Door County on July 24th, you are going to have a lot of fun if you come see us at the Peninsula Players Theater. It's a beautiful setting, a beautiful theater, and we're looking forward to being there. And I'm looking forward to talking with Donna Lotzer. Donna, hi.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you. Nice to have you back.
Good.
What kinds of things poison us at this time of the year? Where do we run into troubles?
Well, when it comes to plants, of course, all the normal indoor houseplant culprits, but most of the time it's outdoor weeds or even cultivated plants that have the potential to be a problem.
So which ones are give us some examples of some plants that we might find in our backyard that could create problems for us.
Lily of the Valley is a real common plant that a lot of people deliberately plant. The whole plant is toxic, and probably the worst part, especially for kids, is the bright orange berries that it puts out, usually later in the summer. But that one is a problem. People might be messing around in their garden and make a grab at a weed and find out they've grabbed nettles,
mm-hmm.
Which is an experience they usually won't repeat.
No.
Because it's very painful. You've got lots of weeds, of course, poison ivy, wild parsnip, that people could get into in the summer months.
And your job is to help them once it happened, but hopefully also help them not do it.
Exactly. Prevention in this case is probably 90% at least of the whole equation.
By the way, if you have a question for Donna as we talk with her about things that can be toxic to us or maybe to our animals, our pets, or kids, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. Reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. It'd be also interesting to hear some stories of problems that you may have had and maybe how you dealt with them. That'd be kind of fun, too. So again, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. What about the houseplants? Poinsettias, are they a problem?
Actually, they acquired a bad reputation years ago, but they're pretty harmless.
Oh.
Of course, for most people, they're seasonal, but right. I know I used to try and keep mine around until at least May or June. They've got a white sap that will cause a little bit of irritation, but certainly nothing like the reports of fatalities, which came out of the 1930s, and were, as they say, highly exaggerated.
Highly exaggerated. Well, aside from plants, what else have we got to worry about?
Well, outdoors this time of year, of course, there's mushrooms all over the place now. We started with the good ones, which are the morels. And but now there's ones that are out there that have the potential to be harmful, make people sick. And so people who think that they're good at browsing and identifying with the little mushroom guides really, really need to reconsider that.
Yeah.
And probably not pick wild mushrooms that are out there.
I would not. I'm not by any means an expert, and so I kind of leave those alone. And unless I was with a mycologist, I'd probably avoid them pretty much. Lucy in Oshkosh has a question or comment. Hi, Lucy.
Hello. I have some African violets in the house, and my little cat is a little curious. Are they poisonous to cats?
Now, cats and dogs and other animals have the potential to react to plants differently than humans. In a human, African violets are totally harmless. If you have a concern about any kind of animal and whether plants can be a problem for it, there's two things. One thing I would suggest that you do if you've got access to the internet, there is an animal poison control center.
Oh.
That's a toll-free number, but it's also got a plant listings on their internet site.
Oh, I have a daughter that could check that.
And so what's it again, the American poison?
The best thing to do is to go under ASPCA.org. And then there's a link there to the Animal Poison Center.
Oh, I thought that you might know that just offhand, whether African violets are, that's the only plant that I have in the
right.
house.
I believe that to cats it's harmless.
Oh.
But there are some plants like Easter Lily and Dracaena that are also harmless to humans and
but
can be very toxic to cats.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so I would just to be 100%, I would maybe double check it.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, maybe we can do a little checking here, too, and see if we can come up with something. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. By the way, as long as we're on the subject of pets, what do you do if you feel or you think your pet has been poisoned?
Well, again, most poison centers that handle calls from humans do not handle animal calls just because there's the potential for things to be totally different. So there is a number that people can call if they've either checked with their vet or the vet is not available or something like that. And the number to the Animal Poison Control Center is 888-426-4435. And again, you can get that information from ASPCA.org from their website. It'll give you a link also. So, but that number, you may or may not be charged for the help, but then again, if I had a sick animal,
yeah,
I would be willing to pay the price if I needed to.
And it's what's the number again?
888-426-4435.
426-4435.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 888, not 800.
Correct.
888. All right, so we've got that. Let's take another call. Colleen in Janesville, you are up. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. Your guest had mentioned the toxicity of the lily of the valley.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. What kind of reaction or problem is there with that? I do have some planted, you know, directly under this tree where my kids and the neighbor kids, you know, everybody plays there, and I even, you know, I clipped a couple of the little blossoms that, you know, they smell so great
right.
in the springtime and brought those in, you know, and put them in a little vase. I think I'm talking about the same plant here. But what kind of a problem can that cause or what does it do?
Okay, if someone were to eat any parts of the plant, there's a drug in there which affects the heart, similar to the drug digoxin. So it slows down the heart rate quite a bit. It can affect the heart rate and rhythm.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, if somebody just was picking them or smelling them or, you know, put one in the mouth and spit it out, that wouldn't be a big deal. But, again, kids especially see the berries that come out later in the year, and they're maybe used to picking berries in the garden.
Uh-huh.
And you would not want them, you know, eating the berries off the plant. But the leaves and the flowers are also potentially poisonous.
Okay, so it's basically if they ingest it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't realize they have the little berries that come out.
Yeah, they can get to be bigger than a pea, actually, and they're a reddish-orange color.
Okay, and you said that's later in the season?
Right. Mm-hmm. If the flowers are gone and the stalks are still there, then they will eventually develop those berries. That's their way to reproduce along with the root system that they're so famous for.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That answered my question.
All right. Thanks, Colleen. Thank you very much for calling. And Duane in Janesville, we'll turn to you. Hi, Duane.
Okay. I have a question about a plant known as wild parsnip or mustard weed.
Okay.
If you seem to touch it, you end up getting a chemical burn or a blister.
Yeah.
And I've also heard that it may possibly be light sensitive, that the light actually brings on the blister.
You're correct on both of those.
Okay.
Parsnip has a chemical which is in the sap and in the entire plant, basically. And if you get it on your skin, it can cause a reaction that may look like poison ivy. However, it doesn't itch like poison ivy. And if you are in the sun, it has a chemical, it's called a sorrelin, and it photoactivates, and it can make it much, much worse. And also, once this reaction eventually subsides, in other words, the blistering and the oozing and the discomfort and the rash and the whole thing, you can get a brown discoloration on your skin that may last 6 months to a year or more.
Yeah, I've had that. Mm-hmm. I work outside, and it's a common problem. It's found in the ditches along Wisconsin quite a bit.
It's very unpleasant, and unfortunately, it's pretty easy just by walking through it, you know, if you bruise or break the plant.
There's no quick cure that it can wash, just wash it off with soap and water or anything else to kind of get it off the skin?
The best way, of course, is to physically have your skin covered, you know, long sleeves, boots, shirt, gloves, that type of thing. They've done studies where people have washed within 10 minutes after being exposed and still have had that reaction. So washing is unfortunately not very timely, you know, for most people, and it doesn't seem to do a lot of help. So most of the time you're treating it symptomatically after you're feeling miserable with the reaction.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Visiting with Donna Lotzer, Senior Clinical Pharmacist and Poison Education Coordinator at the UW-Madison Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking now about preventing poisoning in people with Donna Lotzer, Senior Clinical Pharmacist and Poison Education Coordinator at the UW Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center in Madison. Happy to have her along, Larry Mueller here. And if you want to join in with your own question or comment, or maybe you've got an experience to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Donna, I want to get to this business of this glow-in-the-dark jewelry that you see, or little rings and things that kids put around their necks. You go on the 4th of July, for example, there must have been hundreds of kids with those things. Are they a problem?
They certainly can be, because the liquid that's inside there is very, very irritating. And so if kids either snap them too, you know, vigorously when they're trying to activate them, or if they bite into them, or people who put them in the freezer to try and save the glow effect longer than take them out and try to flex them and it'll break, access to that fluid will cause irritation to the mouth, irritation to the skin, but most importantly, very, very severe eye irritation. And you can get a corneal abrasion or a corneal scratch to the eye, which is incredibly painful from those things.
So it's some sort of, do you know what kind of material is in them that makes?
Well, they're solvents, but it's a mix of compounds because, of course, when you buy them or get them first, they usually aren't glowing.
Right.
And so you have to snap them to break the little dividers inside. The chemicals mix, producing something that glows and produces color. So it can be a mix of chemicals, but it's capable of causing that severe irritation.
Something to remember. James in Madison, we'll go to you now. Hi, James.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is in regard to wild parsnips that you were just discussing.
Mm-hmm.
If I wear long sleeves and gloves, mm-hmm. and then I go home and take them off, am I still at risk of spreading that poison around like poison ivy?
No, fortunately, it's not as bad as if you were doing it with poison ivy. In fact, the part of the chemical that activates in the sunlight, if you were to be exposed, say, late in the day near sunset, and then you went out in the sun the next day, even if it was on your skin, it would not cause that really bad reaction, because it seems to be something that, you know, literally has to be happening very, very close to the time that you get the chemical on yourself. It's always good if you can, if you know you've been exposed, to maybe, you know, consider taking your shirt or pants off inside out. I mean, I do that, again, against poison ivy, and then launder them. But it's not something that will cause a delayed problem like the other one would.
Hmm, interesting. Thanks, James.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the call. And let's go to John in Milwaukee next. John, hello.
Hello, Larry. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And, your guest, Donna.
Thank you.
Larry, about 6 weeks ago, I developed salmonella poisoning from eating cantaloupe from Honduras, I think it was. And within minutes, I began to have a stomach ache. My head hurt. I became very disoriented. I kept going to my refrigerator, opening it, and I couldn't figure out why. After a few minutes of that, I realized why I was doing it. I had read years ago where plain low-fat yogurt, or just yogurt, period, if it had live cultures, fights salmonella poisoning. I ate about 2 cups of it right away. Within about 15, 20 minutes, I felt fine, except a slight stomach ache. I'd like for you to comment on this about the live cultures and acidophilus that apparently made the difference.
What do you think, Donna?
I'm not totally sure, because some of what you're describing isn't what I would normally associate with salmonella poisoning, but I mean, I don't know. Certainly for people who get diarrhea, for example, as a side effect from antibiotics or other drugs, recommendation of using live cultures in yogurt or other products is certainly a good one, and it does seem to help. So in your exact situation, you know, I'm not going to say that it didn't help or wouldn't be a good idea. It doesn't sound as familiar as I'm used to hearing with that type of an exposure, though.
Interesting.
I don't know for sure.
Well, later on, my doctor said that it didn't sound like salmonella poisoning, but my immune system is greatly compromised by diabetes and cancer, high blood pressure. So I would think that perhaps because of that, I was more susceptible to being affected. Again, it's just supposition.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess bottom line is it worked, you felt better.
Yeah.
But I can't fully explain it.
No, it's interesting. Thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. The poison, there's a helpline, an 800 line, if somebody feels like they're, you know, they've done something they shouldn't have done. What's that number?
Okay, there's one number. It works anywhere in the entire United States, as well as the Virgin Islands, and I believe Puerto Rico, and it's 800-222-1222. The Poison Center, which services all of Wisconsin, is located in Milwaukee. And so if you're in Wisconsin, you dial that number, you'd be routed immediately to the Poison Center. But if you happen to be in Alaska, New York, Florida, California, you would be routed to the Poison Center in the area from which you're calling. So you would get the California or New York or whatever Poison Center, which is really a good thing.
Yeah, that's a great thing, because one assumes that those folks are a little more familiar with the plants and so forth of a particular – of Alaska, let's say,
right,
as opposed to maybe Wisconsin. So it's 1-800-222-1222. Now, you'd think, before I've got a question for you, but let's go to Lisa in Middleton. She has a question, too, and I'd rather hear what she's got to say. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning. Great show.
Thanks.
My question is about plastic bottles. We've heard so much. There's been so much in the paper. Is there a simple way to identify when a plastic bottle or container is safe versus the plastics that they're saying we really should be avoiding?
To my knowledge, there's not a way retroactively to find out. I know a lot of places, like, for example, REI is now selling products that specifically don't have that chemical in it. So the ones that are new are going to be labeled. Baby bottles, same way. New products are labeled that they do not contain the chemical. And so looking at something you may already have in your home, I don't know that there's any way to possibly decide if that could be a problem or not.
Oh. So it's better to...
If in doubt, maybe consider replacement if you're concerned.
Yeah. Sure. Are commercial products coming out in safe plastic bottles now, like juices and soft drinks and so forth?
I don't even know if that chemical was in those products, and I honestly don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Karen in Delta is up next. Hi, Karen. Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Earlier, your guest touched on the subject of our early edible mushrooms, and she mentioned the morel mushroom is one of our early edibles, and then she touched a little bit on the later mushrooms that are not necessarily edible and not so good for you. And my question is, there is the early edible morel, and then there's what we call the false morel that comes out a little bit later.
Right.
And there seems to be a lot of ongoing controversy throughout the generations in this area as to whether you should eat them or not. And some people feel that they're just fine to eat as long as you parboil them and pour off the water and don't get the steam in your face. And some people say, no, 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 never go near them. They're highly toxic.
False morels contain a chemical called hydrazine. And hydrazine, believe it or not, is the same chemical which is found in rocket fuel, jet rocket fuel.
Ah.
It's been shown to be a carcinogen, although I don't know at what level. And generally, false morels are not recommended to be eaten, regardless of whether you have cooked them or not. I would tend to stay away from them just because of that uncertainty. But that's the chemical which is involved in the, and one of the biggest concerns is not acute illness, but the fact that hydrazine is a carcinogen.
Thank you, because I had heard that it was similar or you know, the same as rocket fuel,
right.
And that also I had heard that it was could be an accumulative effect to people that possibly had compromised immune systems or compromised livers where it would, could possibly be stored and then cause problems.
With the false morels, I don't know about that. There are other types of mushrooms that will cause severe liver damage and even fatalities due to liver failure.
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, I recall a story. Now, this is some years back of a family that moved here, a professional family from France, I believe, moved to Washington State, Washington, D.C. area. And back in France, they went out mushrooming all the time. And they found some mushrooms that looked like the mushrooms from France and ate them, and the whole family died.
There's a type of mushroom that's in the Amanita family, and some of them have a strong resemblance to your store-bought white mushrooms, except that the cap is white, the gills are white, the stem is totally white, and it has a big bulb at the base. And those are ones that come out mid to late summer, and if they are eaten, cooked raw or any other way, they can cause liver damage, liver failure, and death. And they do grow in Wisconsin.
No.
So.
Something to think about. Yeah. Colleen and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Colleen.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about long-term use of DEET, you know, with all the mosquitoes that are out. And I'm outside all the time, and so I'm constantly putting bug spray on. And, you know, over a lifetime, is this temporary? Can you just comment on that?
Okay, long-term effects in adults, I don't believe that there's a lot of concerns. And if you are concerned, there are several things you can do. Number one, instead of putting the chemical on, I mean, some people use stuff that's basically pure. You know, it's 95% active ingredient. And you can obviously back that way off. You could use something that is 20% or 30% or something like that. You could also consider products that are not put on the skin, but rather treat the clothing. Treat your hat, treat your pants, treat your shirt. Spray the material in a pump spray or aerosol on there. Let it sit and air dry. Then put on the clothing and the hat. And that way, the compound is on the clothing, not on your skin, which would minimize your exposure to it. So those are two possible options. There's a bunch of other products that are on the market that are not DEET containing. Most of them are not as effective, and a lot of them have to be reapplied every 1 to 2 hours to maintain their effectiveness, which can be really impractical.
Some in 5 minutes. Yeah. Some only last about 5 minutes. Right. I'm reading an article on that in the paper the other day in the State Journal. Thanks, Colleen.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And Joanna Neshkoro, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. In reply to the lady about the plastics, I first was alerted to their problem on People's Pharmacy, and they've had since probably 2, 3, 4 shows about that. And so I've been studying them ever since. The little recycling number on the bottom of the bottle or whatever, 1s, 2s, and 5s are fairly safe. They don't contain any bisphenol A or phthalates, which are the real bad things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wash them in the dishwasher and you don't microwave them. And if the lady wants, anybody wants more information, I'm sure if you went on to People's Pharmacy,
they would have it. Yeah,
they'd have it there. But they've had things, Bill Moyers had a show on it, David Brancaccio did.
Yeah.
Information's all over there. But anyway, 1s, 2s, and 5s are fairly safe.
Thank you, Joanne.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Carolyn in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
What's
I have
on
a
your,
question yeah. about puffballs.
Okay.
Is there a general rule about them? Are they safe? I've heard that you can slice them and cook them like mushrooms.
Okay, puffball mushrooms are choice and edible. And they come out late summer into fall. And the biggest thing you have to worry about there is making sure that you know that that's what they are.
Sure.
If you slice them open, they should look like marshmallow inside.
Okay,
in other
right.
words, it should be a uniform color, either white or perhaps with a tiny tinge of either pink or purple. And if they look like that and they're solid, absolutely, they're edible.
Thank you.
There's one that you can mistake, and those are for small mushrooms that if you cut them open, you may see structure inside, and they could be immature amanitas that just haven't grown their stem and cap properly yet. So if there's anything inside, texture-wise or look-wise, that's not like this marshmallow sort of look, I think I would stay away from those. And of course, once they deteriorate, they become brownish and they're not solid inside, and then I would consider them not poisonous, but certainly inedible.
Okay.
All right.
Wonderful. Thanks for your help.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Nick in Green Bay is up next. Hi, Nick.
I've got a question for you. I don't know if you'll be able to help me, but I'm allergic to everything. I don't care what I use, but I ran into the problem now. I can't find a deodorant that I can actually use. I picked up Arm & Hammer. That's supposed to be all natural. I put it on, 5 minutes later, I'm burning, and I got a huge rash now, and I can't find any deodorant to wear.
Have you been seen or treated by an allergist?
No,
you know,
I haven't.
A physician? Okay, the best thing there to do is probably see if you can get an appointment with somebody whose specialty is in allergies, because
okay.
I would bet that they would probably do skin testing.
Yeah, because I mean,
to see what you react to.
I worked at a restaurant once, and I ate their meatballs, and I've never had a food allergy before, and all of a sudden my throat started to get really sore, and I have problems breathing, and ever since I stopped eating at the restaurant, I'm fine. It's really bizarre.
But it could be due to a certain ingredient or even a
chemical
MSG or a dye.
Or something like that.
Right. And so what I would suggest doing is trying to get a hold of a person who specializes in allergies, talk about skin testing.
Should I be that concerned about allergies?
Pardon?
Should I be that concerned about allergies? Or?
Well, it sounds like you have some fairly uncomfortable reactions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so. That's the first time it's happened, and that was 3 years ago, and I've never had a problem since. But
oh.
It's just certain things are just really touchy.
Yeah,
I would. I'd go to an allergist and see what that he or she can come up with for that. Nick, thanks a lot for calling. Well, there was someone phoned in about a product called Technu, T-E-C-H-N-U. And I, you know, while we were talking, while you were talking, I just went online to see. There's a, you know, I just Googled it and came up with some. Do you have any experience with it? Supposedly for treating poison ivy, wild ginger, things like that.
Treating or preventing the reaction.
Preventing the reaction.
Right.
Sorry.
There's a variety. There's a whole product line under that name. And to be honest, all I have to do is look at poison ivy across the room. And I start to itch and break out. I'm incredibly sensitive, unfortunately. I have used the product, and it does seem to allow me to get closer and have exposures without quite so much of a problem. So I can't say that for everybody, but I'm familiar with the product.
Yeah, there's some people, and it's poison oak. And you know, of course, these are all sort of just stories from people.
They're testimonials.
Testimonials and not hard research, but sometimes testimonials, I guess, are okay too.
There's been a little bit of work done by folks from the National Forest Service where they have used it. And again, it's more of an endorsement or testimonial type of thing. But yeah, they claim that that works. A natural product that you can use for poison ivy exposure is jewelweed. The plant form, if people are familiar with what that looks like, it puts out beautiful orange flowers and it has a sap or juice that's the same thing. And again, it's anecdotal evidence, but if you take the weed and put it directly on the skin after a poison ivy exposure to help minimize the severity of the reaction that you get.
Fortunately, I haven't had that. I haven't had an intimate experience with poison ivy. I've come in contact with it, but I've never really had the problem that some of my friends have had, which has been considerable. There have been some considerable problems with it among some of my friends. I'm glad I haven't had that. Haven't had that problem. Anything else that we ought to be thinking about in terms of poisonings at this time of the year?
Well, summer poisons can include things like bug and weed killers that people may use, you know, other than as instructed on the label, or they may store improperly so that kids, for example, can get into them. Of course, the gasoline can for all of your lawnmower and your other things like that. Very small kids tend to want to pop the tops off and inhale this stuff to get high. And once upon a time, it was your 10 to 12-year-olds, and now you may see that in a 4 to 6-year-old. Where they're breathing the fumes to get off on them, to get high on them. And that's a pretty bizarre and comfortable situation. Other automotive products like motor oil, antifreeze, all have the potential for toxic exposures, of course, too. And carbon monoxide. People think of it in the winter from furnaces and other appliances. Mm-hmm. But if you have a boat and you're out, say, on a lake and you've got water skiers or people trying to hang off the back end of a powerboat, the engines are producing carbon monoxide, and people sitting on the back of a boat, if the fumes come up into the passenger area, can actually be exposed to and poisoned by carbon monoxide in the exhaust.
Oh, well, that's one I haven't heard.
Yep. And it has the potential to be extremely serious.
Is that right?
Yep.
Boy, well.
So carbon monoxide, even in the summer months.
Well, I tell you what, if we have some problems, again, I want to get that 800 number.
Absolutely.
Again, and just remind people about it, Donna.
The Poison Center is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's 1-800-222-1222. And it's a number that works anywhere in the country. I tell people to program it into their cell phones, keep it handy if they travel in their vehicle or their camper. You never know when you're going to get bit or stung by something. Or have some other sort of an exposure that you may need some quick advice.
1-800-222-1222. That's an easy one to remember.
You betcha.
Donna, thanks so much.
All righty, appreciate it.
Donna Lotzer, Senior Clinical Pharmacist and Poison Education Control Coordinator with the UW Hospital Poison Prevention and Education Center. We'll have her back and we'll talk again about what we can, what's out there that can poison us. My goodness, there's lots out there. Tomorrow we'll take a look at home renovation and repairs with Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry in Madison and John Viner of Home Performance in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. So we'll look forward to an hour and a half of talking home renovation and repairs. And don't forget, July 24th, come to Door County and watch us do the show live at Peninsula Players Theater. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.